Welcome to the fourth episode of the Mobile Storytelling Podcast with me, Wietse Vellinga, in Friesland in the Netherlands.
And me, Björn Staschen, in Hamburg, Germany. This podcast is about how to tell a story with your smartphone.
And in this episode, we are going to talk to a great colleague of ours from Italy, Nico Piro.
Nico has been working as a correspondent in Afghanistan. He was artistic director of the Mojo Italia Festival. He is currently working for TG3, the news on the television channel Rai 3. Welcome, Nico. Great to have you.
Hi, everybody. And thank you for having me. This is a great opportunity for me. And your podcast is absolutely brilliant. It's a very necessary source for everybody.
You have reported from several front lines in your days, the last one being the corona crisis in Italy. You reported from other places, but one of the most important ones may be Bergamo, one of the hotspots with many people being infected by COVID-19. You reported on a pop-up hospital being built in Bergamo. How did you work there?
Honestly, I mean, this is a very strange experience for me because as a foreign correspondent, I never work in Italy. I always work abroad. So when I work in Italy, there is something, not good going on. And when the crisis, hit my country in full force, I decide to step up and offer myself to the Italian affairs staff and saying, can I be of any help? And so I started working around Italy. And I have to say that all the experience I gained in places like Afghanistan, which is a so-called hostile environment, but especially in Sierra Leone in 2015, I covered there the Ebola epidemic. That experience, gave me a lot of edge in working in the epidemic here in Italy, especially in Bergamo. You were asking about. I took advantage of mobile journalism a lot.
How did you do it? How did you take advantage of mobile journalism?
This corona virus crisis is has a pro and cons. So using mobile devices is not as easy as usual because as everybody knows, as we know, the good thing of using a smartphone is that you can get closer to the stories, closer to the topics, closer to your characters, the people you are trying to tell what they do and why they do it. With social distancing, with people in fear, with people in anger, with people who are under big stress, it's more difficult to get closer. But I have to say that, in Bergamo, as you said, a pop-up hospital was built into the pavilions of the exhibition center on the outskirts of Bergamo, which is one of the most important cities in Italy in terms of factories and productions. A lot of big companies are down there. So that's the exhibition center is a very important facility. I got the chance to go. My camera was the first camera to get into that hospital when working with patients. So was an area with a very high charge of viral charge. So this is what I learned being in ER rooms in Afghanistan. When you are in a ER room and the door in front of you is opening and from that door you see people entering in covered in blood with the paramedics and medics running around them, your camera is a problem because you can be in the middle of their path, because you can hurt them, because you can slow them, so you can make a damage. So you wanna be as invisible, as much invisible as you can. And at the same time, I have to say that I was also thinking about sanification, about how can I keep my camera safe? Because usually in this kind of red zones, whatever goes in never goes out. Because whatever you have on, like your uniform, like the gown, like the shield, has to be thrown away. when you go out. So it's always a problem with cameras. In Sierra Leone, I used the GoPro, which was kept into a specific disinfectant solution for hours. But this time, I mean, I didn't want to go with the GoPro because I had also a GoPro, but it wasn't my main camera. So I decided to use my iPhone XS. Why? For multiple reasons, because I have a real camera, but it's a flat camera, has a few simple surface, so can as a simple shape, so can be easily by hand, cleaned, and which doesn't up, which can be done with the, let's say my mirrorless, which has a multiple surface, has a lot of gears, has a lot of hidden corners, so it's difficult to.
But how often did you clean it whilst filming? Did you clean it in between?
No, I, given that iPhone XS is IP63, is splash proof, it's more than splash proof, honestly. I went into the red zone, which is the ICU. I could get closer to the patients. I could walk freely into the wards, and the phone was cleaned when I get out. When I had to clean, myself. When I had to get undressed. When I had to go through the decontamination process. But again, it's not just a technical aspect. It's also a narrative topic. It's narrative. Being with a little phone into a place where there is a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. People suffering. You don't want to be. You don't want to overexpose. You don't want to invade that place.
Nico, just to get an idea of what you were doing in the hospital, were you kind of producing packages or were you going live, and how long did you stay there? How much did you produce for your news channel?
What I did basically two things. I shot a lot of footage because I was going to feed my news outlet, my news bulletin. I was going to feed our 24 hours news channel, and then I was feeding the news bulletin with a short piece, another column from my newspaper. So I had to edit a 5 minute long piece and then a 12 minute long reportage for my 24 hour news channel.
And did you edit it all on the phone?
No. I stayed into the ward, and into the ward I basically just took picture. And I used not just Filmic Pro on my iPhone XS. I used also Double Take by Filmic Pro, because I have to say that, not because he's our guest, but he's our host, but because it's true. I was inspired by Witze because I like a lot Double Take, because you drive to a place. We are journalists. We are always in a rush. So I was when you drive to a place, you see something like the empty streets of Rome, and you wanna, record something. And with Double Take, you can record you speaking and the road. I started using Double Take in Lesbos when I was covering the refugee crisis in February. Then one day, once driving, I was driving in the empty streets of Rome, and I said, "Oh my God, this is something we have to put for history. We have to put aside. We have to record it." And so I remember about Witze using the Double Take while driving, and I did the same.
It's a ghost town. Usually, this area is at this time of the day. It's around midday. It's around the noon. It's overcrowded with people, cars, tourists, commuters, locals. Now it's empty.
And I uploaded that straight to Twitter, and was a good piece for the social media. And that same thing I did into that world, apart from taking pictures, stills, and videos.
Does it mean you fed the material outside, so someone outside edited the package?
No, I did it. When I went outside, I began editing all the, but mostly I have to say there is another technical aspect. Given the rules, when someone from Rome like me went to Bergamo and to the north, I mean outside of the region in a high risk area, coming back to Rome was supposed to spend 2 weeks in isolation. So I tried honestly to take the best out of my time in Bergamo. So I worked, I mean, basically 3 days in a row. And when I say work, I mean taking picture, getting after people, looking for stories. And so I edited when I was back back in Rome, because my time in Bergamo was precious. Because I mean, you spend 1 day in Bergamo, it means that you are gonna spend 1 day plus 14 days in isolation. So you need really to take the best out of your time up there. Now, finally, we don't have this kind of restrictions in place, but at the time was tough. Even if I have to tell you the truth, I mean, at least in Bergamo, I was totally covered. I used the personal protection equipment, but I don't know if I risked less going to homeless, to places where food was going to be, so was handed out to homeless, or other places like the volunteer clinics for the poorest people here in Rome. I mean, that's the worst part of this COVID thing. It's such an invisible threat. Everybody, technically, the people in front of you can be contagious, and you don't know it. So, I mean, okay, let's stick to the rule. I went to Bergamo. I have to stay 2 weeks in isolation. But a week ago, I was in a homeless facility here in Rome, and I don't think that I honestly risked less than Bergamo.
Yeah. Was it hard to convince the people in Bergamo to let you film in the ward?
My camera was the first camera to get into the hospital. So I think it was hard. And that day, just two news outlets were let in, me and the Al Jazeera guys. And yes, wasn't easy. But at the end,
and
we made it.
Did you get in because maybe you had a phone? Did it make it easier? Would it have been more difficult if you had shown up with a big camera crew?
Listen, they leave this to you. The point is that, I mean, we as journalists, we rely mostly on our reputation. So especially for people working in hostile environment and crisis area, if you are not reliable, you can make it once, but you are not gonna make it the second time. So for sure, having a low profile helped me. But help me especially in building the relationship and building trust with people that then let me in. Because one of the organization running this hospital is an organization which is called Emergency, who has hospitals in Afghanistan, in Sierra Leone. So they knew me, and so they knew that. I mean, the way I work, and then I'm not going to make a mess into a ward. The smaller your footprint is, the better it is. And having a small camera is a real great advantage. Of course, I want to stress this out, it's not just about the camera. It's also the way you handle it.
This is an intensive care unit ward, ICU. In every hospital of the world, an ICU is a very complicated apparatus, is a very complicated machine, high intensity of technology and workforce, specialized workforce. But this time, with this pandemic, an ICU is even something more complicated, because virus can be everywhere, because the first responders, the frontline workers are at risk of getting the virus and spreading the virus. So their efforts are like doubled than the usual time. And being here, being with all this protective gear on and sweating and feeling the fatigue that these men and women are facing every day for 8 hours and for longer shift every day, I would say it's a real privilege, because you can really understand how this fight can be difficult, demanding, and tough. But with this type of effort, we are sure that we are going to make it.
Just one more thing about the technical setup you used, because that's one of the things I think most broadcast journalists are struggling with now, is maybe not even the camera, because indeed a smartphone is easy to clean, but microphones. How did you capture good sound? I mean, that's not as easy to clean as a smartphone.
Honestly, into the words, I used a very minimalistic setup. Tripod, just a simple phone clamp by Joby. My phone XS, no bumper, no case, and that's it. And I did just one interview, getting very close to the doctor I interview into the world, because me and him have heavy protection on, so there was no problem. Outside, I used instead, this is what I have done from the beginning, a boom pole and a directional mic. It's not easy to handle it, because usually you have a sound guy handling it. But if you find a way to balance that long boom pole between your arm and your elbow, I mean, you can make it. But honestly, in these weeks, I have been thinking about a little accessory which I wanna, as soon as possible, I wanna build. And so I have a sort of, I can join the tripod and the boom pole, but this is, a surprise I'm working on.
Yeah, it's a very mojo thing to do, right? Building your own setup, your own kit, finding your own solutions. You've been using your mobile phone for a long time now. When did you start and how did you get that idea?
How did I start? I started because I began using phones was a very particular time of my life, because I have spent years, I've been working as a journalist for 30 years, and I've spent years hovering on the heads of my cameramen, asking them, shoot that, frame this way, do this, do that. There was a moment in my life when I said, okay, I want to take this in my hand. I want to be a better journalist. I want to be more complete. I want to handle all the process. And the chance was going to Sierra Leone, because I didn't have the chance to go there with my company. So I decided to self-produce a documentary about Sierra Leone. I took a month-long holiday and I left home my wife, which at the time was 6 months pregnant, and my little kid, which was 2 years and a half. And luckily they let me in when I was back. I'm still married. And so I wanted to go there and didn't know how to do it. And I started using, I began using a mirrorless, which was the first mirrorless, good mirrorless for video. Then I started using a GoPro, but at the same time, a Kickstarter from Beast Grip came out. And so that opened me a world. I said, I have to go deep into this. And so I started using the phone and I said, okay, that's a game changer. And I
did you also get the B-Script lenses and everything that were on Kickstarter, or did you only start with...
No, on Kickstarter there was just the rig, which was the piece I think they used to shot the Jaguar advertisement, the commercial. Yeah. And that, really gave me a lot of inspiration, and I began using Filmic Pro. And at a certain point, someone told me, there is a meeting in Ireland, and after a couple of years, I was able to join that, and I saw that I wasn't lonely on this planet. There was a bigger community around, and was very happy to be part of it.
What is your kind of main central setup. So it's a phone and maybe a B-script. And what else kind of do you bring on every shoot? What kind of is really important for you?
Okay, there is a, I have a Navi approach. That's my war zone experience. I mean, let's say I never go out without 5 liters of water and without snacks and without, because if you get stuck in an ambush, you wanna be, you wanna have drinks and food. I mean, just joking, but I wanna say that usually I go out with as much as equipment I can. I just published on my social media and my Vimeo channel a stop motion video, which I edited with LumaFusion, and showing all the things I have into my vest. Honestly, I like to use more tools, different tools. I like to use my mirrorless. I like to use my phone. I like to use GoPro. I like to use Insta360 camera. So, because I think that every camera can give you something more to you depending on the situation. Considering my Mojo setup, I was used to go out with the Beast Grip, Beast Rig, but recently I switched to the Beast Cage. Sometimes I use the, especially for studio situation, I use the Dream Grip Rig, because allows you to put more than one phone on the same rig, which is good for studios, and it's good especially if you are if you want to produce the same thing for vertical and horizontal and landscape. But depends, because as I told you, in Bergamo I went in with just a phone clamp, so it's I mean it's not really an healthy situation, but I mean, I have a lot of, I like to experiment. I like to test. I like to learn in something every day.
And which is part of mobile journalism, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good part of mobile journalism. You can really put your hands into it. You can really build it. You can make the difference. You can open new ways. And you can learn something more every day. And I mean, this is priceless.
Yeah, but from a story point, when would you typically use your mobile phone, and when will you choose a different tool?
Okay, let's talk about Rohingya crisis in Bangladesh. Bangladesh is in Bangladesh, as you know, there is now the biggest refugee camp in the world. Because more than 700,000 people crossed the border from Myanmar to Bangladesh. I was there in 2017, and I had all my gear, and I used my mirrorless when it came to food distribution. Because food distribution were very complicated to be covered. Long lines, people pushing, you had to keep a distance, you can go, you can get closer. I mean, when I used my phone, when I had to get closer to people, when I had to enter into people's shelters, when they opened their doors, and I mean, when you use a camera, people are not talking to you. They are talking to a piece of metal and a piece of glass. When you use your phone, you can keep eye contact. You can, they talk to you. They stop thinking about the cameras. They know that piece of equipment, because most of the time they have the same piece of equipment in their own pockets. So it's this makes a big difference. And it's also nice to combine different, especially with the Filmic Pro, you can use the log profile, so you can combine different cameras. You can mount your GoPro on the windshield in a car. At the same time, you can use the phone to record people driving, and then you can use the mirrorless if you want to have if you want to cover long distance. Events at a long distance. So, I mean, I think that we have to be as flexible as we can, because the goal is taking the stories to the people, And the goal is being less invasive. The goal is putting people who are opening the doors of their own houses, their own hospitals, I mean, their places, putting them in a comfort zone. That's the key, according to me.
Listening to you, Nico, it seems like you're a master of all the different balls you're juggling in the air, the cameras, the equipment. So it sounds like it is high art to do mobile journalism. Would you say it is also something for beginners? And if so, what would you recommend to a beginner? How to start?
To me, according to me, it is for beginner. My idea is that mobile journalism is not the solution to every shooting situation. I will be very happy tomorrow to go out with the full crew using a red camera or a Harry, having a sound engineer, having a light guy. Who knows, maybe one day. But I think that every journalist on this planet has to know how to film, how to record his own voice, her own voice, how to take pictures with the phone. It's like when you go in a big library. I think about the Trinity College in Dublin, and I think about the great masterpiece made by our friend Phil Bromwell. And I mean, that's a big library. When you go into that big library, what you want? You want to reach the volumes, I mean, the books which are on the higher shelves, but you can get on that higher shelves without a ladder. And our phones are the ladder. Why? Because it's not about pushing buttons. It's about knowing the grammatic, knowing the language, knowing how to frame, how to build a visual storytelling. And when you have an easy tool in your hands, a very light tool in your hands, that makes a difference. So mobile journalism is the entry point into the visual storytelling, into the visual journalism, into the video journalism. After that, I usually say this to my students. You want to switch to a red camera which weighs 25 kilograms or whatever weight? Okay, you are welcome. But don't think that you can learn with such a complicated and such a heavy piece of equipment. You start, I said early to say C100 and C300 by Canon, whatever camera, whatever big professional camera you can think about. A device like a mobile phone helps you to put technicalities apart, put the physical effort apart. You can focus yourself on the storytelling, and that's a great, great learning experience. Then after that, great Hollywood directors decide to use just a phone for their own movies. But it's just a choice. You wanna reach the books on the higher shelves? It's up to you, but you need a ladder, and a mobile phone, that's the ladder.
Yeah, and you used it extensively in this COVID-19 crisis. And if we look around, you see a lot of journalists now for the first time discovering the fact that they can use their mobile phones as a professional tool because they kind of have to. Do you think this is a moment that will really be a breakthrough for the use of mobile phones for storytelling?
I want to put it in a slightly different way. I mean, nowadays, our world, the world of the journalism, is in a deep crisis. I mean, and we don't know what's going to happen after the COVID crisis, because, of course, COVID crisis will impact on the revenues of our televisions, our radios, our newspaper. And I hope that people working in companies where there is a classical, traditional workflow. I mean, you go out with the cameraman, maybe with the sound engineer, with the sound guy, and then you have an editor, or at least you have a cameraman who's also an editor. I hope that those journalists will understand right now how important it is to be independent, to be, I mean, technically speaking, independent, technically speaking, autonomous. Because, I mean, listen, nowadays, going out, just if you just think about smart working, people working from home, recording interviews from their laptops, their mobile phones. How can you record an interview if you don't take proper listening shots? I mean, shots of yourself listening. You wanna use the same shots you have on your video feeds from Skype or from Zoom? It's not professional. You wanna, how is important to, let's say, cameraman? I mean, nowadays, it's not advisable to drive in the same car, let's say, from 3 hours with another person. So, I mean, being independent can lower this risk. When I was in Bergamo, the guys told us, who's going to enter the place? And I said, myself. Why? You don't have a cameraman? I said, I am the camera guy. I'm the journalist. I'm the camera guy. It's also a matter of being responsible. I wouldn't have sent someone else into that place. I mean, staying, leaving myself outside in a safe area. So it's a multifaceted topic. What I hope that we are gonna leave behind this barrier in our job. I mean, cameraman, editing, and the reporter. I hope that more reporters will understand that they have to be self-reliant, they have to be independent, they have to know all the different steps of the production chain. This is what I learned in Afghanistan. In Afghanistan, I mean, I was in September in Afghanistan, and I was the only Western reporter being out in the streets. Why? Of course, because I had the low profile with the very small cameras. I could take pictures in places where no one else could have taken pictures, like restaurants. Of course, it's not just the camera. It was my experience, my tactical approach was years and years of building relationship, building links, building, let's say, intelligence about that place. But I don't think that what I have done in Kabul in September could have been possible with the cameraman.
And then you had gathered all this experience abroad, working with your phone, and suddenly worked at home in Bergamo. Were you as worried or even more worried when getting into this gear, getting into this hospital in such a strange situation? About yourself, I mean, about your health?
Honestly, not, because this is what I have learned from years and years in war zone or in places like Sierra Leone and things like that, in years of my being a journalist in hostile environments. It's a fork in the road. If you feel like you are under stress, you are going to get hurt. So it's not for you. If you feel like you can handle it, it's for you, but you know that the toll is coming. You know that maybe 2 weeks after, 3 weeks after, you are in your home, you back in your safe home in Italy with no people, with the AK-47 at the door of your building, and you don't have to look at the holes in the road looking for IDs or things like that. And then suddenly something happens and you, I mean, all the stress from those days falls on you, but that's part of the game. And honestly, I learned that you don't have to trust people who are fearless, because people who are fearless are absolutely unreliable. Fear is a tool of our job, because fear helps you to plan more, to be better in what you do, and to put safety first. We don't need heroes. We need, someone, a colleague with a lot more experience than I have, once told me, you don't want to be the news. You want to cover the news. You don't want to end up in the news. And that's our job. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, those are very wise words, I think, especially in these times where some of us are maybe for the first time in dangerous situations where you are a lot more experienced than I think most of us. And I would really like to thank you for participating in this podcast and sharing some of that wisdom with our listeners.
I honestly thank you for the chance, because I think that we are in an age where sharing is power. We have to share, we have to build a community, we have to try to be as useful one to another as we can. And I don't have words to say thank you to you, not just because you had me as a guest, because you are running this great podcast, which is a treasure for all of us.
Thank you very much, Nico. It was great talking to you. Your openness and everything.
Well, thank you again. And I think that wraps up episode 4 of our mobile storytelling podcast.
Thank you and bye-bye.
Bye-bye and till next time.